Do you know that feeling when everyone is talking about a movie that you haven't seen? Have you ever felt compelled to make some vague comments just so you can join in the conversation? Well, what if you were in too deep? Do you think you could convince everyone that you'd seen it? Or do you think your version would be so much better that no one would care? Here at Faking Movies, we're always the ones who haven't seen the movie.
Anything you can do better. I can do anything better than you.
Oh, you can.
Yes, I can.
Oh, you can.
Yes, I can.
Oh, you can.
Yes, I can. Yes, I can.
Fuck.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to... Is this the start? Are we starting now?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Hey, everybody, welcome back to Fake Movies. Fuck me, I don't know what episode this is. This is episode 266?
Five.
Fuck, I was going to say five. Episode 255.
65.
God damn it. This is episode 265.
I really threw you off your game this time.
You really fucked us on this one, Seth.
I'm pretty happy about that.
It's a Montreal screw job up here.
Hey, we were just talking about wrestling. So yeah, we do this show. It's called Fake Movies, where sometimes we fake movies. Mario, also our friend, I don't know if we still do the Twitter because I got off Twitter.
Yeah, me too.
I'm really fucked up here. I don't know how to get us going.
Like, what do I do with my hands?
Exactly.
Lee, you said you had some stuff pre-movie you wanted to talk about.
I do want to point out, I know that I believe last episode I pointed out that we were in a new era. A new season of the show, The Bean Time, has descended upon us.
Oh, that's right.
I heard from Zach, who was on vacation with many friends of the show last week, that beans were under assault.
Man, you should put salt on beans, to be fair. But
well, you got to wait till the end. Otherwise, they get tough while you're cooking.
It's a whole thing. Yeah,
makes sense.
People in the club would know this. I was on vacation with Twitter maven Marielle and Street Team captain Kev, friend of the show Kev. Really catching some shit for the bean club. I don't know. I've made two bean clubs now. They've both been spectacular. There's not much else to say. I'm just disappointed in all of our friends.
Yeah, this fact that they're not bean leavers like the three of us here. I like
you
to
wanted
think
to,
of
you
Seth,
wanted to throw that.
Oh.
Out. Okay,
yeah. I like to think of Seth as the Renfield of Bean Club, at least for the moment.
No. I'm eating the small lives that you guys offer me.
Yes.
Which is recipes, and then I have to use inferior beans.
It's true. Yeah, that's exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, you did tell me about the freshness of the dried beans makes a big difference, and boy howdy were you right. It is night and day. Night and day. It's wild.
So I hope those few people who still listen to our show are enjoying that this show is becoming a heavily bean-based podcast. C'est la bean.
Hey!
Wow!
Caught yourself. Good job.
You just really wanted to do a bunch of puns, didn't you? Yeah.
No, not really. I want to
sing a song called Bean Weaver.
Oh, I like that.
All right, you're in the club.
That's all it took.
Do
you
rules, we can't tell you the rules ahead of time.
In life after love,
beans
after love. Well, actually, so the reason I brought that up is because, yes, last week was a new era, a new season. But I also think that this week is itself the end of a different era in the Faking Movies history.
All right.
This is the last recording, I assume, before I go to see Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1.
Which is
a big moment in my life. I have no shame in saying.
Wow.
I assume you're most excited to boo at that thing we watched the video, the stunt where he motorcycles off the cliff and whatever.
I'm in no way excited for that stunt. I'm excited for everything else I've seen.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
It's your
duty as a person who sat through that video to boo loudly when that thing happened.
Yeah, that did suck. Yeah,
I feel like I'm not as like burned on it by you because it sounds like you watched a much longer version than I did.
No,
the one I
also
watched was
kept
like
destroying that
6 minutes long.
Oh, they killed so many very
also,
new motorcycles.
They kept showing footage of him like doing it while wearing a harness into like a pit that they easily could have CGI'd. And they were like, we literally in the video, they're like, we could easily CGI this and it looked great.
Yep.
Go for it.
But Tom has a death wish, and we have to do whatever he says. So.
Well, I mean, you know, as we learned from my episode, was it Smoke?
Sure.
Yeah, that's my theory, is that
Oh, yeah.
He literally is trying to die on screen.
Yeah, wouldn't be surprised. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And that era will come and go, and then there will be another era very shortly thereafter. I think Zach is very hype. Seth as well, but especially Zach. The Barbie
girl for the era for the Boppenheimer
the Barbenheimer weekend.
Yeah, very excited.
I saw a stat today that Regal actually said I think over 30,000 people have already secured tickets for the Boppenheimer double feature.
I found I was cleaning,
so fun.
I was cleaning my car the other day. Mm-hmm. I was looking for something that I lost, and I under the seat I found two $20 bills, and I ran into the house and I said to my partner, it's our Barbenheimer money. Like that's this is what it is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Gonna have a real Thursday about it. Yep.
Oh, it's gonna be so great. Yeah,
talk about
this. Really gonna be so fucking great.
Now, what's the ordering?
I want to see. Well, so
I think I'd want to see Oppenheimer first. And
exactly.
I agree. You want to be. Yeah. You want to be bummed out, and then you want Barbie to lift you out of that
funk. I want
funk.
It to be Barb and J. Robert go to Bar Del.
Are you doing a Barb and Star? Because I love that.
I was trying to figure out how to do it, and I couldn't get it in situ. I apologize. We'll work.
I'm very into that.
Yeah, but still, do a Bob and or a Barb and J Rob.
Well, this I feel like I've really turned around on this because as recently as like a week and a half ago, and I'll tell I've got some more stuff time wise to talk about. As recently as like a week and a half ago, I was on team only see Barbie.
Yeah, me too. Same. But then. All the news dropped about the hog log.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Florence Pugh, full frontal. Great. Love it. Cillian Murphy, full frontal. Unprecedented. So exciting.
Are we sure it's unprecedented? I've never watched Peaky Blinders. It sounds like a show that would involve a lot of full frontal nudity.
Or maybe that happened in Jupiter Ascending, but I fell asleep.
He was not in that.
Oh, whatever. Somebody who looks like him was in it.
Eddie Redmayne was the man who was in that movie.
Oh,
All right. Okay. Well, I was close. It was going to be a good joke because I fell asleep in that movie so many times. But
I went to see that alone because my partner, rightly, refused to go see it with me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I know people love it.
Hey.
I just...
We circled back to Beans, right? Sean Bean is in that as a weird bee man.
That's right. He's like a soldier, and they use the bees to tell who's royalty.
Complicated.
Yes, goddamn.
There's a lot of amount of world building in Jupiter Ascending would work in a novel
or in like a series. Like if the whole thing had been expanded to like I don't know, it wouldn't have been good. But it would have been at least as good as Earth 2, which was a great film that had, or a great show that had Tim Curry in it and, the Kurgan. Why can't I never remember his name?
Clancy Brown.
Clancy Brown is in it.
Oh, yeah, I vaguely remember Earth 2 existing.
Rebecca Gayhart is in it. It's got like a lot of big names in it.
Rebecca Gayhart of that other sex tape that one time.
I was going to ask. She had a whole thing at one point, right?
They had a sex tape with, it was her married to that guy from The Last Ship. He's a real silver fox. He looks great. Mm. And then a third, and that was the scandalous part because people weren't doing that in, I guess, 2003? I don't know. Yeah.
Weird.
Huh.
Yeah.
Well,
they
whatever.
Were. But,
back.
As long as it was all consensual, that's all I care about.
I think it was. Pretty sure it was.
Back to Barb talk. Well, did you have any major?
I mean, just every
being excited. There's that Ken
bit.
Spot that popped.
Yeah,
out.
They put out the Ken
spot
today.
That just dropped.
Yeah.
Came out. It was like, I was so hoping. Like my idea, my thought of this movie. You guys knew the thing I hoped for from this movie was not like, oh, Barbie goes to the real world and teaches a lesson. It was like the world is weird. And we stay in the weird world as much as possible. And it seems like we're getting that, even though Barbie does go to the real world.
From
like,
Greta? It's got to, that Greta would do the thing we want. She always does.
I know. But I also was thinking, like, I hope Ken stays an afterthought joke in the whole movie. But that spot really turned me around. I want to see, like, what happens.
He's
Ken
got
now.
An arc, for sure.
Even if it's, like, a background arc. Like that time Abed helped a woman give birth in the back scene. scenes of that episode of
a whole episode.
He's like not in the episode and is just in the background doing little things. And it's so I would like that for Ken.
I also forgot Ryan Gosling can sing. He was singing.
I guess so. I mean, the only other time I think I've ever heard him sing was in Lars and the Real Girl, and he's very much doing a Tiny Tim impression.
Don't forget La La Land. There's just
I never saw La La Land.
See La La Land. That was a period that I had really soured on anything Oscars related because it was all kind of like nothing.
And also, I think like by the time La La Land started showing up in like the theaters where I was living at the time, like there weren't like at that point anyway, there wasn't any like indie or arty theaters around. Not that that's an indie or an arty movie, but it's not like a huge blockbuster either. I think it had gotten to the point where like everybody had already turned on it.
It did not take long.
Also, it's a Damien Chazelle movie, and I fucking hate that guy. So like,
not fair, a huge fan.
But Barbie stuff has been great for my mental health. Like my local indie showed my favorite movie of all time, The Red Shoes, because Greta Gerwig said in an interview, The Red Shoes was one of the inspirations for Barbie. So they've been doing Barbie inspiration movies. Yeah.
Oh my.
That's very cool.
This is the best part about indie theaters is just one person says one offhand comment and you're like, well, let's just do that for a fucking month. That seems
cool. Like we have, we've got three screens. Three screens and a 4K DVD Blu-ray copy of a thing that we can play into the projector. So like, let's do it.
Yeah. Yep. That's great.
Yep.
It's good shit.
Sure. Yeah. Barbie is going to change the world for the better, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
On a personal note, y'all know last week while Zach was living it up on the Almost Beach, and Seth was struggling. Not struggling.
No, but, struggling.
but working away in the work mines. Mm-hmm. Friend of the show, Austin, and I went on a canoe trip.
On a big long canoe trip.
Yeah, to the Boundary Waters in Minnesota. And I have a story I want to tell.
Okay.
It was from over the course of 4 days. After I have been in a canoe one other time in my life, and it was to paddle to shore on a man-made pond to get beer and bring it back out to the middle of the man-made pond where we were all bobbing up and down in life jackets.
Wait, holy shit. I thought that you had at least some experience.
I also thought that very much. Because
you do not do the Boundary Waters unless you have at least some experience. I assume you... Oh, jeez.
Did Friend of the Show Austin know this?
Yeah, he asked me on the drive up.
Oh, that's entirely too late.
You know, the 8-hour drive from where I live.
I assumed you were up front because all the steering happens in the back.
Well, I was sitting in the front for that reason.
Yeah exactly.
You're the power, and Austin is the brains.
Yeah, it's the person that
makes sense.
Keeps you from crashing into that Widowmaker that is straining the lake.
I did about an hour of in the back because during the day I'm about to talk about, there was a lot of weird, not quite portaging, but like getting out of the boat in marshes, and like we had to go over a beaver dam at one point and stuff, and like so.
That's very fun.
Okay. So like at one point it was, you know, we're standing there and it's like, okay, time to get back in the boat because the water is now deep enough again to put the canoe in, and
it's your canoeing through a swamp.
Yes, at one point for part of it, it was supposed to be a river, but the river was so dry that it was basically a swamp. And you know, friend Joas said, "Okay, get in." And we were both standing at the back, and there was nowhere to maneuver. And I was like, "Well," because there was a huge drop off, of course, because the water, the water depths were changing rapidly. So how do I get in up front? And he goes, well, you just get in and then walk up front. And I said, I'm not doing that because I'm going to flip the fucking canoe.
Oh.
And he said, oh, that makes sense. I'll do that. So I did steer for about an hour. It was a good time to learn. The water was relatively calm at that point.
Learn a J-stroke and sort of get into that. Yeah.
But yeah.
Oh, boy. I had no idea that you were doing this.
This is like, here's a motorcycle. Figure it out.
Holy shit. Like it's a little lower stakes, but also
could be higher.
Could be higher.
All told, we did about 44 miles in 4 days. mostly canoeing, a little portaging.
That's a pretty mean clip, honestly.
Yeah. Oh, my arm still hurt. It's days later.
Yeah.
But the day, and like the last day, we had a map, and of course the map says like for reference only, not for navigation, but that's the one that they give you, that they sell you at the outfitters, mm-hmm. that we got the canoe from.
Sure.
And the key was like, okay, an inch and a half is a mile. And we didn't have a ruler, and we didn't think to like cut a piece of string or something. So we were like just moving our finger on the map to like gauge how far we were going. And we thought we camped 6 miles in. We were like, oh, this is a great campsite. We wanted to go further today, but this is, and we day tripped out from there. It turns out it was over 9 miles out. So the morning that we left, we woke up at like 5 and then went 9 miles and then got in the car and then had to drive 8 hours home.
Yeah.
So that sucked. That was just bad resource management when a resource was time, which a thing I have to learn to think about time as a resource because I just watched Interstellar again the other day. Anyway, yes. On the third day when we did our big loop, so we get out of this swamp and we go across this giant lake. I think we did a 4 mile paddle after the lake.
Damn.
And then after the swamp area.
Yeah, right.
And then we're like, okay, we're going down this this inlet, and to our right there should be a portage. It might be a little overgrown, and it's just swamp. Swamp the whole way. And we go, and we go almost all the way, because we're using the map as a guide, mm-hmm. and there's a campsite, and then the portage looks like it's going to be almost directly across from the campsite on the other side. Here's the campsite. We start going. Don't see a portage. We get down about halfway to the far shore, and we're like, okay, we haven't seen it. Let's turn back and start looking again. Friend of show Austin sees a little clearing, and he goes, great, this has got to be it. Let's go. Turns out it was a deer path, which we didn't realize at first.
Well, yeah.
So
you tend not to.
Yeah, we walk in on the marsh pretty far, and this was my first experience of sinking down to my hips into
muck.
Muck.
Yeah.
So that was a little panic inducing.
This
is a more inauspicious beginning to several actual horror movies that I've seen in my life.
Yeah.
Like, you're luckily in the beginning the middle of so many wrong turn movies right now.
It's luckily the middle of the day at this point. Like, I don't even know if it was noon yet. Like,
sure.
Of course, friend of show Austin is carrying the canoe. I'm carrying all the packs and water. And also that day when we filled up water at the start and treated it in the canoe, we didn't cap all of the things correctly. So we're down to like a liter of water at this point because we didn't bring enough treatment with us. Because we were like, 9 liters will be fine for our trip today.
How many times by this point did you personally consider we should turn back? We've made a terrible mistake.
So many.
Mm. Okay. And how many times did you vocalize that? Zero? Was it zero?
Zero.
Okay. Yeah. You made the right choice. I would have done the same. Yeah.
So... Austin's got the canoe over his head and he's like, I'm gonna keep going straight and see if I could find a portage trail further down, and takes like 10 steps and I just see him completely sink into the ground with the canoe over the top. Like, oh my god, what just happened? And of course, because we're cool kids, we weren't wearing our life vests, so we didn't have like that little bit of extra padding just in case. Mm-hmm. So he pulls himself out, almost loses a shoe. In the meantime, he's like, there's like 3 clearings that I can see from here. Do you see them? I'm like, yes. And at this point, I'm fully panicking.
Yeah.
He's like,
yeah.
Check them all out. Check them all out. See if any of them are the portage. I run to each of them in succession. And they're all clearly just ridges where there isn't a tree because it's a little ridge.
Mm-hmm.
And I get to the third one and I just start shaking my head no. And I just drop the map and all the packs and all the water on the ground, and I start to take my clothes off because I'm in full, complete panic mode.
Just gonna run into the woods, never to be seen again.
Yeah. And Austin, I guess, sees me, and he's like, "Is that the trail?"
No.
He goes, "Okay, meet me back at the water. We're gonna try this again." Okay, and that shakes me out of it just long enough to like get back to the water. Of course, I sink in all the way twice on the way, and while that happens, I'm just staying there like, "Why did I do this? I should be home right now. Why am I not home right now?"
This is how I die.
We get back out on the water, and it's like, I say, we need to go to the campsite that we saw and figure this out. And he goes, I think we give it one more try. And we paddle down to the far shore and see if we could find it. It was like 5 feet past where we turned around. Of course.
Yeah. Finally, that feeling of relief is so nice. Once you get really there, it just washes everything away.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So finally we get to it. It's very marshy, so we sink in again, but like now there's light at the tunnel.
At least there's a path.
We go over this relatively short portage, and then we just have like two short lakes till we get back to the campsite at that point.
Yeah.
And then we went swimming.
Yep.
Oh, love to see it.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That is a harrowing tale of
that
time. Almost became a bog witch.
I could have been a banshee.
Yeah, or a selkie.
Mm-hmm. Mm. The thing I always think about is when I like I've been lost in the woods on like a hike, and you take kind of similar circumstances. You like lose your path.
That,
and you're like,
I don't panic when that happens because I trust that I'll be able to find my way at least to a road.
Right. You at least like you walk in a certain direction. You figure
it's the
out
water.
Out,
but... It's the introduction of the water.
Yeah.
But even in those circumstances, the thing I always think is dumber people than me have done this before and have survived. So like, surely there is a way out of this.
Yeah, but that's, I don't think there's nobody dumber than me. So how's that?
There's a couple probably.
And Zach, for reference, maybe my cat. That day I think we did 14 miles, and if we had turned around instead of going forward, we were I think 11 or 12 miles in at that point.
Right, you're around the horn already. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah.
Hmm. Okay. We did a lot. There was a lot of mutiny on the Bounty. Round the horn. Yeah.
No, yeah, of course. Yeah.
No Mr. Christian.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that would have been, I would have broken in a different way had we turned around.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Worse, for sure. Yeah.
Worse.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Maybe. I did get to see Canada because we went up to those falls.
Oh. Yeah, I've only ever been on the Canada side. I've never done anything on the U.S. side. The Canada tends to be a little less swampy.
Mm.
But
also, apparently, according to Austin, at least the Canada side doesn't have like official maintained campsites, so it's a little rougher.
It's rougher, but also there's a lot more rock faces where you can like find a nice exposed place with very few trees and things. So
sure.
So anyway,
regardless,
I died, kind of a spiritual death on that trip.
Sounds like it. Hey man, you
and
made it back.
Physically I may never recover, but I had a blast.
Yeah,
there you go. You feel like you accomplished a thing. That's always good. It's like again, the end of any like outdoorsy thing, you get back and you're like, I did the thing. That's nice.
But Seth has gone on several trips with a friend of the show, Austin, and I, and we kind of have a bingo card of things that happen on these trips.
That's true.
And I think all of them happen.
Did you get hypothermia this time?
I didn't get hypothermia, but camp got rained on day one, which is why we set up camp so early. We didn't get lost. We just couldn't find the thing that we knew was there on the map, which I guess is a version of being lost.
Yeah.
It was all there. We hit them all.
Is there no... like GPS on a phone? Like, can you bring a phone? I do that on hikes sometimes. And like, you can.
I do too. Like, my phone could just about send text messages, and certain spots.
If you preload the maps, GPS is all satellite. You don't need service for that.
Well, I guess that's a good point.
Just saying. Mm-hmm. And you can bring a battery pack so it could like last for several days.
We weren't planning our trips out until morning of. So
sure. Mm-hmm. Just in the future, yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm never going to do it again because I was too scared of the water.
But. Next time, we're going to do Sea Base.
I don't know what that is, but sounds...
Oh, it means scary? That we're going to go down to the Florida Keys and just us will man a boat and sail around the Keys.
No thanks.
Oh. Well, I've been sailing once, so I feel like I could definitely do that. Yeah.
I've been sailing a couple times. I could probably handle it.
What's the worst that could happen? Yeah. Like, it'll be fine.
What's that Nicole Kidman, Sam Neill movie?
Oh, God. Dark Waters.
Dead Calm?
Dead Calm.
Yeah.
Oh.
I think Billy Zane, is he in it too?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. I forgot there were all those people in there.
Speaking of movies filled with stars that people have forgotten about.
Is that true?
Seth is doing a movie this week.
Okay. Oh my god, we did it. Wow. Okay. All
right. I mean, I'm doing a movie, but I don't think any of these actors have been forgotten about. But
No, the movie has been forgotten.
Definitely, yes.
All right. Well, the movie I am faking this week is called Morning Glory. Yep. And the people you gave me were Rachel McAdams, Harrison Ford, Diane Keaton, Jeff Goldblum, and Patrick Wilson.
Look at that.
It's good cast. Left
them out.
Patty Wills.
Yep. Yeah. All right, so let me get into it. I thought that it was short, but it turns out that it's 1,500 words. So.
Oh, okay.
I kind of in a panic. I had a lot of troubles coming up with something, so we'll see what happens.
I like that your like short ones are 2 pages single spaced, and my long ones are 1 page double spaced. Like...
yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I feel like you add a lot more flavor into that text than I do.
I use it more as guidelines. Yes, yeah. Quite much like pirate rules.
Yeah, that's more of a guideline than a real rule. Hey, Zach, mm-hmm. you best get used to the reference to that movie.
You best get used to us referencing Pirates of the Caribbean because you're in one. Yeah, is that what you were going for?
Anyway,
yeah.
Anyway, Morning Glory. We open on sort of a muffled battle scene. It's kind of out of focus. That gets louder and clearer as the credits are relentlessly trudging on. Much like Lee did in The Boundary Waters. But we can clearly see that there's like a clear line of demarcation between the two battle lines. Like, we do a lot of bouncing back and forth, and there are combatants that are sort of in light colored clothes slash camouflage that are fighting people who are wearing dark colored clothes. And there's like a sweeping shot of this action, and then we draw out really, really far, and we can see that there's very clearly a space on the right side of the screen that is much, much darker, and a space on the left side of the screen that is much, much lighter. And then there's this sort of liminal middle space between the two. And in that space, you can see the dark clothed figures are, coming from the left. They're coming from the light side. And the light-colored figures are coming from the dark side of the screen. And the borders are pretty clearly straight lines, like perfectly straight everything. But all along that middle area, you can see like the two armies sort of like zigzagging back and forth. Like the line isn't broken, but it's very wavy where, the black has overtaken the white, or the white has overtaken the black, or whatever. So it's sort of like a messy zigzag, that sort of thing.
Okay. I have ideas, but go on.
Yeah. Anyway.
I'm trying to be good.
Good?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so there's this messy zigzag in this sort of gray liminal middle, and it starts to fade away and morphs into the title, Morning Glory. Because we have all these lines that kind of look like writing, and it turns into the title.
Smart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's doing a lot of direction up front, which is real stupid.
Sure.
Anyway, we slam cut back into the action, and we find Rachel McAdams, who is in black, just eviscerating someone that is wearing lighter colors. And then we pan over and find Diane Keaton in lighter colors, completely doing the same to somebody in darker colors. And it's sort of like pseudo-medieval, but not really. It's like... it's much like a Final Fantasy film sort of colors, sort of technology things.
So there's Audis just blasting donuts around all this.
Yeah,
shit.
Yeah, I didn't think of that, but I was thinking of like an enhanced medieval sort of thing, like Dungeons and Dragons sort of okay. Warfare, right? Like where there are projectiles, but there's also melee weapons and all that sort of stuff. Anyway. They're just murdering people right and left, and then we, sort of focus in on them, and they like notice each other, and they start to do some sparring and light jabs, one-liners, etc. And then they suddenly receive simultaneous messages on whatever communication sort of material, like a headset or earpiece or whatever. Like they are, somebody talks to them. And Harrison Ford tells Rachel to stop, and Jeff Goldblum tells Diane to stop. And then, you know, our two ladies are very pissed off, but everyone else around them has, because they're like in the middle of a melee, and they want to murder each other and all that. But everybody else has sort of stopped as well, and they're instructed to go back to their respective bases to await orders. So, you know, Rachel, who is wearing these dark colors, goes back to her base that is blindingly light. It's so bright there. It's really kind of hard to see. And Diane returns to her base, which is very, very dark and is sort of like illuminated by, you know, I don't know, some kind of phosphorescence, but not much. Anyway, now we, there's, you know, a little camaraderie. They meet with their respective teams, and we're sort of jumping back and forth between them. You know, all kinds of pseudo fantasy military tech chatter, you know, stupid shit like that. And then we focus on Rachel, and she is instructed to meet with the higher ups at, you know, a base that is close to sort of the liminal line that we talked about earlier, the gray space in between. And then somehow we get into some exposition here. Maybe it's a monologue or some other shit. It doesn't really matter. That there was sort of years ago, there was a minor scuffle between two major groups on whatever this planet is, you know, over something dumb like territory or who has the best pizza dough recipe or, you know, something like that. Like, it doesn't really matter.
Who has the best dough? Who has the best sauce?
Yeah, exactly.
Is this a remake of Little Italy, the Hayden Christensen Emma Roberts movie?
It is. It is, in fact.
Oh, okay.
But Rachel McAdams gets to stab a guy.
Oh, okay. Better. Way better.
Already better.
Yeah, well, without a doubt. Anyway, they're fighting over pizza recipe, and then two scientists named Luke and Owen set off an experiment that sort of slowed and eventually stopped the rotation of the planet. And so half of the planet is in total darkness and half of the planet is in total daylight at all times. So, you know, after, you know, several years after the accident, we'll say like maybe 10, you know, the lines are pretty clear. The dark side are peoples and the light side are peoples. We need better names than that, but I didn't come up with them. So that's
fine.
No worries. You know, you start to develop your own culture. Like, that's a long time. And, you know, I went into some details, like the light side only uses solar panels for power and the dark side only uses wind power from the windmills set near the border where the temperature pressure differential sort of keeps the air flowing past in a really efficient manner for that kind of green energy.
I particularly like that you, up until basically the time we recorded, said, I have no ideas, and yet completely world-built an entire society, societies, in fact.
Yeah, but like, not much. And well, so the reason that the people that live on the dark side wear lighter clothes when they're in battle is so that they can infiltrate the light side. And the people on the light side wear dark clothes so they can infiltrate the dark side and, you know, not get murdered if they're caught on the wrong side of the line, that sort of stuff.
Sure.
You can hide. Anyway, they've been, you know, fighting for a while, and naturally, you know, the world is exactly bisected, and, you know, fighting over various power things, you know, but there's this strict line around the planet, and it's completely protected by both sides. Anyway, we get back to Rachel and Diane, and they both show up at the same, like, base that's sort of like a pamanchang between North Korea and South Korea. You know how there's, like, the demilitarized zone, and there's many, many buildings along there. Not many, but there's, like, 7 buildings that are technically in both territories, and so when you have important meetings between North Korea and South Korea, you both enter the building and then it's considered a free zone in there. It's
neutral.
That's sort of you've been there, right?
I have been in the Panmunjom and in those buildings and crossed over to North Korea very briefly, sort of stuff.
It's fun.
Anyway, but Jeff Goldblum and Harrison Ford are waiting for them there, and they're like, hey, you're going to be members of a joint team headed by our scientist Patrick Wilson, who's there to fix the mistakes of his two brothers who caused all of this shit in the beginning. Okay. Luke and Owen, of course.
That had to come back around. Uh-huh. I was like, where yeah, are uh-huh. we going? Okay.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah. His two famous brothers. Who caused all this shit in the first place, and, you know, you're going to read...
Oh, my God. Jesus Christ.
Oh, it took you that long, huh?
Because they're not actually brothers.
I know.
Patrick.
Yeah. Well, as far as we know.
No, that's why it took me so long to get there. It's like, what the fuck is he talking about?
Yeah, the scientist Luke and Owen Wilson.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Brother of Patrick, yeah. Sure.
He's in one scene of Bottle Rocket. He just goes, hello.
Oh, wow. Oh, Patrick.
Wow, I love Jesus or whatever. I don't know what Patrick Steele is. I thought he was really into Jesus films.
He plays a Mormon in Angels in America.
Oh, interesting.
He's in all of the Conjuring movies.
Yeah. Zach, did you see the new Conjuring movie that came out? There's a bespoke metal song that goes along with it, and Patrick Wilson does vocals.
What? I knew it was coming out. I did not know those details. Wowzers!
Remind me. I'll send it to you later.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to look it up right now. No offense, Seth. Go ahead.
It's by the band Ghost, I believe.
Oh, I love Ghost. They wear full face paint. It's very fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, well, I'll look it up right now. Listen to the rest
okay.
of my story.
Okay, all right.
So,
you can look it up, just don't play it.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
All right, well, it's become clear to the various governments, you know, the two heads of state, Harrison Ford and Jeff Goldblum, that, you know, this whole thing is untenable. You know, it would be really ideal if they had a planet that actually worked again. And, you know, like, nobody has managed to get a space program off the ground, so they just are like, hey, let's fix this. Instead of keeping murdering each other.
If there's a sequence where, like, the negotiations get tense,
mm-hmm.
and let's say this like, neutral zone is on a flat kind of... I assume it's flat.
It must
like,
be.
They're
it
in
must
a building.
Be. Yeah. Huh?
Yeah. Can Harrison Ford say, get off my plane! And then...
Mm-hmm. Oh, flat plane. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
And then Goldblum can do a Goldblum thing. I don't really know.
I was thinking each side. Yeah. One side has an Elon, probably the dark side, and one side has a no, they're both the dark side.
Yeah.
An Elon and a Beezbos, and they're trying to get off the planet, and everybody's like, fucking knock it off. We're done with that.
We're all starving.
They just murdered them.
Yeah,
anyway.
Good. Perfect.
Anyway, so the mission is called Operation Morning Glory, so they can actually have, you know, mornings and evenings again.
I forgot you were going to call that the movie's called Morning Glory, and I thought you were going to say Dumbo Drop, and I was like, where is he going with this?
That would have been great.
A spiritual prequel to
if
this
we
movie?
Drop a big enough nuke into the center of the earth.
Oh, well,
we call the nuke Dumbo.
There's plenty of bullshit like that about to come. We're getting close. Okay. We're getting close because I have all of my world building done, and so now we're just getting into the shitty bits that are only like five sentences. So, they're given the details of the mission, and there's some kind they need to implant some kind of device thing. You know, I don't know, in a deep cave or, you know, in an ocean or on a mountain or some shit. Like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter anywhere and somewhere they will have to adventure to get to.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And the device will restart the rotation. It's the MacGuffin, right?
This is a real movie.
Yeah.
Deep Impact? Is it Deep Impact? No.
No, you're thinking of the core.
The
yeah.
core. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Which is a movie we tried to watch back in early pandemic when we were watching movies together, streaming them together. There was that plug-in on Chrome that like played things.
That was really bad
sequence,
at that thing. Yeah,
and
yeah,
it
yeah.
did not work at all, but I think we tried to watch the core one time.
Yeah, I think we did
Makes
too.
Sense. Okay.
Anyway, after we introduce the MacGuffin, you know, at least halfway through this film, then we have a bunch of, you know, get-to-know-yous and, you know, begrudgingly following orders but not really liking it because of racism or whatever. And all that, you know, that general jazz of two crews that don't want to work together, you know. Mm-hmm. Anyway, of course, Rachel and Diane become friends over this period, and there's a lot of character building.
I admire the way you gut those people. Really, thank you so much. I admire the way you slice Achilles' tendons before you torture people to death.
Yeah,
we're not
exactly.
so different.
Not
after
so
all,
different,
are
you
we?
And I.
Yeah.
Exactly. And at some point, it turns out, of course, that Patrick is evil, and he wants to blow up the planet instead of start the rotation again. So, you know, Rachel and Diane eventually have to figure out that they do want to change, that they want to get back to the good old days and nights of those two things existing. Instead of, you know, the current system. So, they somehow defeat Patrick, I don't care how, and manage to, you know, install the real device wherever, it doesn't matter. And in the final scene, they emerge from the cave on a mountainside, or whatever, all battered and bruised and bloodied.
As the sun comes up.
Yep, to see the start, you know, they see the sun start to rise over the landscape for the first time in years. And that's the movie.
Love it.
That's love nice. It.
Mm-hmm. That is nice.
Yeah.
You had all the right twists.
It's contained.
And the right amount of them, yeah. Yeah.
I didn't expect Patrick to end up being a bad guy, honestly.
No, I didn't. I was like,
yeah, so that was a nice little addition. I would have been watching that in a movie theater, being like, oh,
I thought
that's
I had
fun.
I thought I figured out the first twist, but there's a different one. Yeah,
yeah.
That's anyway. Fun. When you first started talking about like very sort of delineated battle lines, I thought we were in a board game for some reason.
Oh,
yeah, I thought chess.
I was thinking Risk or something. Dark and the Light would make sense. Yeah,
that does make sense.
Or Stratego.
I had thought Stratego, and then I remembered how you play
grids,
Stratego, and I was like, that doesn't make
sense. Parts in the middle that aren't grids. Like,
oh,
yeah.
There is no man's land. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
No, it was basically just the horizon, I guess, that region.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's really fun.
Hmm. Yeah. Anyway.
That was great.
That's my Morning Glory.
Very well done. Very well done. All right, you want to hear the IMDb?
Yes. Is Kev coming on, or?
If he is, it's a surprise to me, too.
Same. Man, it'd be wild if he popped in.
Oh, man, what if he's been sitting there waiting and none of us knew he was
coming? I should just send him a link next time.
See what happens, yeah. Okay, so it's kind of like yours. The IMDb summary reads...
Is it?
An upstart television producer accepts the challenge of reviving a struggling morning show program with warring co-hosts. So, like, a lot like yours, essentially.
It's a girl making it big in the city kind of movie.
It is. But the girl's Rachel McAdams, so it's like, you just love to see it.
Sure.
She's so charming.
Right.
Yeah.
Before I get into the little more in-depth summary, a thing I just need to point out... And Zach knows this already because I pointed it out while I was watching it. There are 11 montages in this movie.
I watched this much later than you. I didn't think I noticed any of them, actually.
Jesus Christ. There are so many montages. Not all of them are long. Some of them are pretty short. But I counted anything that was set to music and showed the passage of time and was minimal on dialogue as a montage. And there are 11 of them movie.
That's a
lot.
Ton. Yeah.
I will say, you noticed them. I didn't notice a single one, though. So, like, I think they worked, probably. Kind of.
This is the second time I've seen this. And the first time I saw this was when my partner and I were, like, very early days of relationship. When we were just watching something on streaming back when there were far fewer options on streaming.
Sure.
Ooh, this is like, wow. This is a real test of relationship because you look at each other like, are you into this? Is this your kind of thing? Yeah.
Well, okay. And the reason we kept watching is because of all the montage. We're like, no, there can't be another. We have to see this through.
I get that.
And then she got really annoyed at me last week or 2 weeks ago when I watched this movie again in her presence. So she's like, didn't we watch this 10 fucking years ago? Like,
To the musical aspect, I will say...
Dated with the songs.
It is, but it has actual songs in it. Erica and I both said, like, oh my god, do you remember when movies used to have soundtracks that they would put out on a compact disc and you would buy them because it was like, oh, it A, reminds me of the movie, which is, you know, if you like the movie, that's good. B, you don't get like mixes of disparate songs very often. Like,
that's true.
That's really fun.
Mm-hmm. What?
And there are some real bangers in here.
Like,
there are some good ones.
Like,
well, it's very Natasha Bedingfield. Although I did watch Get Over It this weekend, and Sisko sings in that movie.
Yeah,
so.
He does. Natasha Bedingfield did the bespoke song for this, I think. Maybe it's not bespoke. I don't know. But.
Well, it's not. I think it was. I don't know if it was written for the movie, but it certainly was like debuted in the movie.
Right, but that name alone dates this movie to a very specific time period. Yeah.
And then there's that song, "Hey, you put your new shoes on." Mm-hmm. That's in the movie. That mm-hmm. also heavily dates the movie. Mm-hmm. Like
for sure.
The music in this movie reminds me of going to a Regal Theater like a half hour early 10 years ago. Oh, it's yeah. like it's yeah. waiting for the movie to start music.
Right. Before Maria Menounos had the
Maria Menounos
cornered
comes
the
on.
Market on all that shit.
Hey, it's go buy a Pepsi, Menounos's. You dumbass.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Here's some teen influencers that you've never heard of that are going to talk about things you don't care about.
Or like, here's a really easy movie trivia question for y'all to try yeah. to answer yeah. on the app. What's an app? I don't know. These are new. I'm Maria Menounos. Yeah. Like, yeah.
Yeah. What's the longer one?
Got him.
The longer one is McAdams is a TV news like morning show producer mm-hmm. at like a local-ish state, a big local station. And she gets fired. Mm-hmm. So now she's got to enter into a job searching montage. She's got to go try to find a new job. Mm-hmm. So she's like interviewing anywhere she possibly can. Eventually, she takes a flyer and applies at like one of the big networks mm-hmm. for their morning show. And she gets a call back from Jeff Goldblum, who's like, come on in, an interview. And he's like, we can't pay you much. This show is failing. Our network is called IBS, and no one makes any jokes about that at any point in the movie.
Yeah, what the hell?
I have to go yeah. back. I have to go back to the firing. It's so fun and of this time. She wears a t-shirt that says, I accept, because she thinks she's getting a promotion.
All of her coworkers think she's going to get promoted, and they yes. made the shirt for her.
Yep, and she yeah. puts a jean jacket over it, and as he's saying, you're fired, she's unbuttoning the jean jacket. It's like, it's exactly this movie kind of thing to do. Yeah.
I do yeah. think, though, that like this whole opening sequence was unnecessary. Like, you could have started with her being like, her mom being really shitty to her about her career dreams.
Yeah.
And just then she gets this interview. Because, like, her mom is like, is it time to give up? Is it time to admit this was a mistake? And it's like, Mom, I'm 28 and I have succeeded in my industry and yeah. lost my job at no fault of my own. Right. Like, no, it's not fucking time to give up.
Well, they have to establish that she is really good at the thing. Like, I think that's kind of why the initial stuff happened.
They establish that she's a workaholic more than anything.
Oh, she
I
is
think.
That for sure. But yeah. she's also very capable, which is kind of the crux of her character, I think.
Right.
I mean, I think I could have believed that, like, the shorthand for capable, I think, in a lot of movies is like the person who says some really intense, insightful stuff in an interview and thinks they don't sure. get the job. And that's exactly what happens in this movie.
Yeah.
Like
yeah,
yeah. she does the interview with Jeff Goldblum, and a podcast I listened to called This Had Oscar Buzz. I listened to the episode on this show, which is what made me.
There's no way this had Oscar buzz. No fucking way.
Well, look at the cast.
Yeah,
it's got before it sure. came out, it had Oscar buzz because okay, of the cast. Okay. Yeah, but like, I listened to their episode on this show because I remembered this movie, and that's what made me think we should do it for our show. Mm. But one of the things they point out is like, this is that Goldblum period after Jurassic Park, but before he's like, I'm looking as IMDb picture now. He's wearing a fucking Technicolor Dreamcoat in it. Yes. Like, it's before he started doing that. So he just looks like a normal guy.
This is a transitional period for several people. Harrison Ford as well is in a weird part of his career in this movie. 100%.
This is after 2010? The mid-2000s shitty yeah. action movies that didn't work out yep. before he decides, I'm just not going to act anymore.
And yeah. he's like ultimate curmudgeon in this movie, and he leans now into curmudgeon but lovable, and he's just a total dickhead in this movie. So sure.
yeah
mm-hmm. yeah,
so like, she's leaving the building and she meets Patrick Wilson, who ends up being her love interest, who is completely superfluous. They barely have any scenes. There's like kind of a conflict of like, I think you should put more time into our relationship, Rachel McAdams. And she's like, but my show. And then it all works out in the end because they're happy and the show succeeds. So
it's,
like,
it's the most tedious romantic subplot. But also, again, it is this kind of movie needs that thing. Like, sure. that's
but it's kind of good that it's the guy that gets shoved into that role this time.
That's, oh, for like, sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
yeah. yeah.
But they also make him like the hoity-toity one. He works for the magazine news mm-hmm. show.
Yeah, and he works for the respected 60 Minutes style show, yeah. and he like he has worked with Harrison Ford before, so he can yeah. give her some advice on dealing with him.
She literally says at one point, you produce one 15-minute segment every 2 months, and I do an entire 2 hours every single day. And so yeah, it is nice that he's like not incapable, but yeah, mm-hmm. she's doing all the work, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, he's also like generationally rich, and they make a point of like pointing that out. Yeah, like, sure. Yeah,
you don't need this. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. She like in this scene, she also meets Harrison Ford, who is like the Walter Cronkite of this network, sure. and she like gushes over how much she respects him, and he's a dick to her. And then she gets the phone call from Goldblum, and he's like, "Do you really think you could do this job?" And she's like, "Absolutely." He's like, "You start on Monday." Smash into another fucking montage of her looking for an apartment on the ferry, pen in her mouth, circling the ads in the paper, you know, yeah. She goes to work the first day, meets the like assistant producer, because she's the executive producer, and he's like, he's actually a good supportive character. He's like the, and this will make sense when we get past the summary, he's like the Stanley Tucci in The Devil Wears Prada character.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that does make sense, yeah. He's him as a person is the second rate Bradley Whitford as a human
being. Yeah, John Pankow. Yeah. If you've seen him, that will make total sense. But, you know, he's like, "I'm here to support you because I don't want this job. I want this show to succeed." And she does the first meeting. And in the first meeting, it's like, oh, she's overwhelmed. But really, she rises to the challenge immediately. And she fires one of the hosts, who is played by Ty Burrell, a.k.a. Dracula with HIV from Modern Family.
That's the hallmark from Modern Family? Okay. I mean...
No. That's what I think he looks like.
Oh, he's AIDS-y Dracula. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, yeah. A gaunt guys. Dracula.
I don't know.
Dracula is kind of gaunt. Yeah.
That's a good
one
point.
One of his hallmarks, maybe.
But he's the guy from Modern... The dad from Modern Family, who plays a real creep in this movie in this one scene, and I've seen him not act like doing stuff in like interviews before, and he's not a creep, but he has a really off-putting energy, so I think this was great casting.
There's a darkness about him that I think he is an okay dude, but yeah, just being around, he is like looming for sure. Mm-hmm.
He willingly lives in Utah, Zach.
Oh, you hate to see it. Okay.
There's a darkness there.
Yeah. Well, the only note I had for him, because he does disappear in the, I guess he... No, Modern Family had to be kind of on the air at this point. Maybe not. I don't know. He is a foot guy. He tries to take pictures of Rachel's feet. And I was like, wow, this is before, like, I think the internet and WikiFeet, like, were all about the feet thing.
Mm.
Movie's a little ahead of the curve on that one, maybe. Mm. I don't know.
Maybe not Hollywood, though.
Could be. Well, there's that Nickelodeon fucking nightmare guy. Yeah.
Dana Snyder.
Yeah.
So she fires him, immediately gets everyone's respect. Diane Keaton is the host who we find out, like, as Rachel McAdams goes on and starts revamping the show and making it more ridiculous and over the top to try to get ratings, because Goldblum is like, if you don't get the ratings up to a certain point by a certain date, the show's canceled. Sure.
He gives her a seemingly unattainable ratings level. Like, you're never going to do this. It's impossible.
Which, of course, she pulls off, you know, because she's our main character.
Point. Yeah.
Yeah.
But while she's transitioning the show, Diane Keaton, like, pulls her aside in the hallway. And she's like, hey, all these crazy stories. And she's like, oh, God, what's going to happen? She's like, I want in.
Oh.
And it turns out Diane Keaton's, like, fully on board.
Okay.
Like, totally chill. Also just wants the show to succeed. Like, great. Really underdeveloped character other than that. Like,
yeah, she is. Yeah. Like, her and Harrison Ford are obvious sort of co-pilots of that generation, and they are literally in the same role on the show, but she is not in this movie enough. It's confusing.
Yeah, she gets a little, like, they do a little bickering where sometimes she gets the upper hand, but that's about it.
Yeah.
The whole deal with Ford is she needs a new host, Rachel McAdams, and she figures out that Harrison Ford, whose character's name is Mike Pomeroy, which, I don't know, is just weird.
sounds like a news name, kind of.
I mean, it mostly sounds
an
like
old
a
department store.
Name, yeah.
Oh.
Pomeroy was an old department store, which is why I think it's weird.
Mm-hmm.
But she finds out in his contract that, like, he works for the network, but if he doesn't do any stories in a certain period of time, he has to accept any job they offer him, or he loses out on his contract.
Uh-oh.
So she forces him onto the show, basically.
Ooh.
And he's just a dick the whole time. But then over the course of the movie, he starts to warm up to her and respect her a little bit. And things that happen. He breaks a huge news story about the governor of New York getting like arrested secretly, doesn't tell her about it, just drags her along in a situation where if he had told her about it, it probably would have gone a lot smoother, but you know, movie.
Yeah. Yep. He says you never would have come along if I told you the real story. And I was going, yes, you would have. What are you fucking talking about? Like,
right.
It's a stupid thing to say.
Yeah.
There's a, the weather guy, she keeps putting in increasingly insane situations, and he's, you know, totally game for it because, you know, he's getting on camera and the show's... he's a character actor. I've seen him in... he's in Drop Dead Gorgeous. He plays the weird pedophile judge at the beauty at the beauty pageant. That's what I know him from.
One little trivia while we're on that topic. So, yeah, increasingly weird things. He goes up in a fighter jet, I think. Or some kind of fast plane, and he passes because of the G-force.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. There's a roller coaster scene, too, where I think he throws up.
He throws up a bunch, he gets a tattoo on air. It's like a whole thing, and he hates the whole thing. But so the fighter jet thing, I think, based on the trivia, is a real thing that happened to a news anchor, but after this movie came out.
Oh. Oh, shit.
Yeah, super weird.
inspiration, I suppose.
I guess. I think so.
Yeah, I don't know.
Anyway, she's doing such a good job that she gets a call from the Today Show to go on an interview, and she goes on the interview, and they have all the people interviewing her have a series of TVs behind them playing the other morning shows, and she just keeps watching her own morning show. And then, like, there's a cooking segment, and Harrison Ford keeps refusing to do all these things, including cooking segments. Mm-hmm. And he keeps refusing to, like, say certain words on camera. One of them is fluffy. And he's, like, the cooking segment on her show is falling apart in real time while she's doing the interview. Mm. And Harrison Ford's like, where's Rachel McAdams? And they're like, she's interviewing at the Today Show because she's so good at her job. And then you see the panic of, like, but I respect her and I want to work for her. So he runs out on set and he... earlier in the movie sets up that he likes to cook and he makes frittatas a lot. Mm. So he goes out and he's like, today I'm going to teach you how to make a frittata.
Man.
And she like,
you know how there's like little words that get you into an accent, like Foo Fighters for.
Yeah, for sure. Uh-huh.
Every time you do a Harrison Ford, I can't not hear get off my plane. It's just that every sentence you say has that cadence.
Get off my frittata. I didn't kill my wife. Yeah.
I don't care.
So like she's I don't care. So she sees him on the TV, so she's like, sorry everyone, and like finds the remote in the middle of an interview, turns the volume up, and he's like, the thing about frittatas, you know, he's doing his whole thing, he's like, and I only make them for people I care about. And she realizes it's me. He cares about me.
Oh, you made
and
me
she
care,
like
man.
Leaves the interview and like the show is a huge success and Goldblum is like, you guys bought yourself 2 more years easily. Like you're the biggest thing on TV and now everybody is like happy to work together and Harrison Ford and Diane Keaton are not arguing anymore and Rachel McAdams and Patrick Wilson kiss and there's probably another montage and, like, you know, and that's morning. That's morning glory. It's, you know,
it's
capable.
Yeah.
Oh, I think it was
quite good. It's a capable movie.
Yeah. I liked that the main conflict, this is a rom-com, but the rom isn't there, right?
Sure.
It has all the elements of a rom-com. It's all the same shit.
It's just a light dramedy or whatever.
It's a rescom. It's a respect comedy.
It is, yeah. The two main people aren't in a romantic situation. They're in a like work respect each other situation.
Yeah,
and
so,
it plays out in exactly the same way.
And they've got like a real
rescom. Is that a thing?
Rescom. We can.
Sure,
yeah.
TM. I think. TM.
Yeah. Marielle, get on that, please. Thank you. Actually, no, friend of the show, Austin, you're a lawyer. You get on that, please. I don't know what kind of law you do, but like,
God, it doesn't matter. He knows more than we do.
That's true.
That's true.
I think in another era, like they would have been love interests for sure.
Yes,
I'm honestly surprised.
Exactly.
Even in
this could have been a worse movie if they did that thing, and they didn't.
Yeah, yeah.
And I do respect the movie for that. Yeah.
Yep.
Even in 2010, I'm surprised they aren't.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
But you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. It's fine.
All right. Any
the reason
you want to talk about? Then?
I have a few things, Zach. I don't know about you.
Same couple. Yeah. Go ahead.
All right. So the reason I brought up Devil Wears Prada, it's two reasons. One is I think there's two better versions of parts of this movie. This movie feels like a mashup of Broadcast News and The Devil Wears Prada. Okay. And I think both of those things are better at what they do because they're not trying to do too many things.
Shit, you're right. The thing I just described where it's a rom-com but there's no rom is exactly Devil Wears Prada. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This movie is that exact same story.
Including the like superfluous boyfriend character. Yeah, except in that one, she like, it doesn't, yeah. And he's not supportive. Like, also, this is like Broadcast News is like, we got to figure out how to turn this news show around. Sure. And there's the elder statesman, respected news guy. And then there's the blah, blah, you know, like, I just think both of those movies are better than this movie. And it's like hard for me to not think about those two movies. Part of the other reason is the writer of The Devil Wears Prada, Eileen Bosch McKenna, wrote this movie also.
Yeah.
And it kind of feels like this is just the leftover ideas version of that movie.
Like how I wrote The Core, and then I wrote this.
You did a better Core.
You know, I think a little bit, I guess.
This is
but yours sounded better.
Devil Wears Prada, probably. Yeah.
And yours was a better Core.
Yeah, exactly.
I appreciate that.
Also, Seth, yours reminded me of, like, it feels like it was a prequel to an episode of Star Trek, the original series.
Oh, yeah, I can see that.
Oh,
uh-huh.
Sure.
Yeah, there's very
much more
detailed characters.
Yeah. We didn't, like, Kirk and Spock and Bones didn't go down to, like, negotiate yet.
Yeah.
Like,
Heard. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's mostly kind of the things that I was thinking about this movie is, like, it's a person who has written things that I really like.
Yeah.
And it just feels like this is the worst version of the things they've already written.
Mm-hmm. I think you agree with the populace on that. That seems to be the thing that I was mostly reading from other folks as well.
Interesting.
Yeah. I have one thing and two trivias. I was listening to someone recently talk about Rachel McAdams in the most recent season of Dave, which is Lil Dicky's TV show, which is spectacular and everyone should watch.
I think I also heard this same thing.
Okay.
Go on.
It's incredible. Dave in the show, Lil Dicky Dave, sets her up in his mind in this like impossibly perfect light. Like she is the absolute pinnacle of everything he wants in a woman. And then he actually meets her in real life. And like the obvious thing is like, oh, she actually sucks and she's like kind of shitty or whatever.
Sure. That's the joke that we would get from like a sitcom 15 years ago, 10 years ago.
They did the correct subversion thing and she's like exactly the thing. She's so pleasant and just genuine
and
everywhere. Yeah. And like nice to him and whatever. And like this movie feels like that. Like I feel like I was watching Rachel McAdams be Rachel McAdams and that like it feels like she really just is cool in real life.
you know, so like this is semi-related and this is definitely like this is a little like Boise talk. But
Idaho?
One of the things I've always heard, yeah, exactly. One of the things that I've heard about Rachel McAdams before is like, oh, you think Rachel McAdams is attractive in pictures? And then, like, you meet her in real life, and it's like, you look fucking horrible in pictures. You're so incredibly gorgeous. Mm, like,
I think that's got to be a personality thing, though, too. When you meet somebody, and you're like, oh, my God, your whole thing is just amazing. Like,
Nice orangey glow, just
exactly,
like our dick
auras. Yeah.
A joke that we haven't told in, like, 150 episodes.
It's been a while. It's been a while.
Oh, like, that was, this is going to sound weird. That was Abraham Lincoln. Was described
that's
way.
That's what I've heard. Yes. No, for sure. Yeah. That,
really?
That is.
This is true.
All of his biographies is they were like, he is a interesting, commanding, fascinating presence.
Like the way I learned about that was like reading Herman Melville correspondence when I was researching something that I was writing at one point. And it's like, oh, I got to meet President Lincoln today. And he goes, starts talking about it. And it just keeps trailing off into talking about how beautiful he is.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And it's like, I know the photographs, but like, oh my God.
You don't
like,
really know.
And
until
then I was
know.
Like,
yeah.
This is a weird thing. And then I looked it up and it's like, this is common.
Like all over like, the place. It's really
well, and I think this,
documented.
It's especially because that's the less common thing, right? You're like, you hear so many stories of like these people that are supposed to be awesome. And then somebody has just a passing interaction and it sucks. And then it's like, bummer. Like, but yeah, it seems to be the opposite with her. On this same note, first trivia thing, The person that they wanted the first in the first place for this role was Reese Witherspoon. And I have heard the opposite thing about her.
Interesting.
Like, none of the charm, and she's always putting it on and kind of a little abrasive sometimes. Like,
well, you know, it's not the same exact kind of role, but like, she would go on, she's in that show, The Morning Show, on Apple. Like, yeah. And she plays an on-camera personality in that, but like,
she is the underdog in that show too, where she's the young one and she's the one who's trying.
She's
to
the local
herself.
News person who gets like plucked out of obscurity because she like does because
she's good
some
at the
really
thing.
Good viral journalism, yeah, and they're like, we need to shake up the show,
right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, I guess that is kind of similar, weirdly. Yeah, she apparently passed. She read the script and was like, no.
Okay.
No, I'm good.
Well, I was reading that McAdams passed more than once until because she thought she wasn't funny enough, and the director convinced her to do it.
See, well, that's fine. That see the very very different situations there. Like that again, so impossibly charming.
Yeah. I get, and like, you know, like we listen. I've gone back and rewatched Wedding Crashers. It's a fucking mess, and it's gross as shit.
Yeah.
But, like, she is still really good in that.
Yeah, she's good at everything.
And
yeah.
Also, she's incredible in Game Night. I mean, Game Night's just really good.
Sure. But The Notebook is a masterpiece, yeah.
I mean, I was talking about comedy specifically. But
oh,
like,
sure, yeah.
You know what she's really great in? That she's not only great in, but hilarious in? Slings and Arrows. It's a Canadian TV show. It was, like, her big break.
Wait, haven't we talked that to death on this?
I think that's called Wheels Ontario that you're thinking of, but
with Aubrey. I forget his
I have watched
current name,
a shocking amount of Canadian TV in my lifetime. Like, you know,
Second trivia, by far the best trivia that I found, was from the Wikipedia article on this movie. Harrison Ford and Diane Keaton somehow never met, and Harrison Ford, somebody asked him in an interview, like, how was it and he says, we've been working in the same business but different branches of the business. Mm-hmm. She was in the intellectual branch and I was in the running, jumping and falling down branch. Which is like, you know, he also seems like a very endearing person despite the like gruff exterior. Mm-hmm. Kind of, yeah.
You know, like I always think of like his Conan interviews. I feel like Conan always brought out the best in him, because he allowed him to play up the grumpiness, but also just talk about
whatever
he cared
felt about.
Right. Well, and and you know,
that's why Conan was a good late night host.
Exactly.
You know,
going
what's
on
fucking
Conan,
wild? Conan. When I started watching Conan when I was a kid, he was terrible at interviewing people, and now he is so fucking good at it. It's like so cool to see him having gotten better at that.
I feel like a lot of people say this because it's you, when you go on Conan, you know he's on your side, and a lot of people say when you go on late night, you're there to do the dog and
you're
pony
doing
show,
promo.
And,
yeah,
and also like sometimes.
Oh, you mean like when Paris
questions.
Hilton went on Jimmy Fallon and they pitched their
NFT
Bored Ape NFT,
right?
And had to make that sound like it was impressive and interesting. Yeah,
but there's no like gotchas. Like everybody knows Conan's like, again, on your side. Like you're there for a fun time, and yeah, it makes sense.
I particularly love listening to Conan and Lisa Kudrow talk, because I love finding out that they had been friends for many years before either of them got famous.
So good. He also apparently is an extremely good mentor. Pete Holmes had a talk show very briefly when Conan was at TBS, I think, when his show like got weird there.
They definitely overlapped. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he said Conan used to like stop by and just like ask him how he was doing and like give him tips and stuff. Just apropos of nothing, just like being a
that's
nice guy.
Cool.
It's like, that's incredible.
I think it's because Letterman didn't mentor Conan, but Letterman never gave Conan a hard time about taking the old late night show that Letterman hosted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And like, I don't know that they're friends or anything, but like, if you think about it, if there was anyone that was ever going to be like, have a problem with Conan, it would have been Letterman in that period,
right.
And Letterman didn't.
Right.
Yeah.
And I imagine that's like Conan kind of was just like, that's obviously the correct way to act.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Of course. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Okay. Should we rate?
Yeah.
I think so.
All right.
Yeah. So with 81. Oh, no. We should do money first.
Wow.
2010, it cost $40 million. Mm-hmm. It made $60 million, which I think is a technical failure, but
it's okay.
You know, yeah.
I mean, money and a half, it just squeaked by.
feel like in that era, it might have been just early enough in streaming days that it could have turned a profit selling DVDs and shit.
Yeah, I feel like I read a couple times that somebody said, like, we went to the execs with it, and they were like, it failed because we don't know who it's for. Like, it's not quite a rom-com, and it's not quite, like, a straight comedy, and it's like... It's like they didn't market it quite correctly, and they didn't.
I think
really
the way you market
it.
This is you just market it off the names, and they just didn't.
You
do
would
that.
Think. You would.
I
think,
don't remember hearing about this at all.
It also got bumped around the schedule a bunch. It got. Yeah. I think it got rescheduled like 3 or 4 times.
It was a summer, and then a late November, and then an early November. I think. Yeah.
Heard.
Yeah.
Anyway, 81,000 votes. So people saw it. It has a. I think reasonable 6.5. That's just right in that
I think
pocket.
This movie, I think in like a couple years earlier, this movie would have cleaned up on cable.
Oh, right, easily. Yeah.
Okay.
Lee,
how
thoughts?
Do you feel about it?
I think this movie is workmanlike in that, you know, it's got a goal, it sets out to accomplish it.
And it does.
And I don't know. It mostly does. I just don't know if it quite... It's a landlord. It cuts corners to get there, I think. See 11 montages.
I don't think I'd call it a landlord. I think I would
you're
call
right.
it
it's not
a kid who mows lawns.
Yeah. Yes. It's a teen. It's a preteen who mows lawns.
Yeah, where they're mostly competent, but also didn't do any edging whatsoever.
Mostly competent, good intentioned. They get the job done, but like, did they?
We have friends that have that thing.
Yep. So with that in mind, I think 5.2.
Okay.
That's still the reason I'm not in that middling pocket. Yeah.
The reason I won't rate it higher is because like, if it were on TV, even if nothing else was on, I don't know if I would pick this.
Ooh. What if you're like,
yeah.
on vacation and it's like day 3 and you're a little burnt out and you're like watching movies in the hotel and you like hit this on TBS, like I feel like I would.
This is what I'm saying. I think I would keep
really?
Looking.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Seth, for a lot of the reasons we mentioned, it's a better The Core. It's a prequel to an episode of Star Trek. If you give it to the right kind of cinematographer, set designer, you got some cool visual shit. I like Rachel and Diane being ass kickers, like that's real fun. Patrick Wilson, we've learned from Aquaman, is a good villain. you know,
like,
a movie that took me a long time to come around to, but you know, I kind of did.
Sure.
I'll give you a 7.8. I will not flip past this on cable.
Okay. All right.
I appreciate that.
OG. So the criticisms I saw. That I think I agree with, we're all that we've been talking about the cast should have carried this a lot. And everyone agreed the performances were really good. Like Diane Keaton is doing Diane Keaton.
Keaton is doing so much more with that character than she has any right to be.
Oh, yeah. I assume they probably lost some of her stuff in the edit. And that's a goddamn shame because she was just killing it. Yeah.
Yeah. She feels like an afterthought. That's the problem.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Rachel absolutely killing it. Harrison, even in his like darkest curmudgeon only days, I think really did well. It seems great. The movie itself is a little derivative or whatever, but the frittata scene really fucking got me. I literally cried. It's just like, you know it's gonna happen, but you just go
wow.
It doesn't take much for me, but like, man, it really got me.
I am movie crier supreme, and like,
I don't know, man.
Not even close on that one.
It's just, you can see him telescoping the thing the whole time, and it happened, and I just went, yeah, it's perfect. It's perfect.
Aww.
The secret to a frittata is you have to make the heat very high.
Very high.
That's what makes it fluffy.
Yeah.
I didn't kill my wife.
It's like, whoa.
Get off my plate.
Harrison, no one asked about that, but okay.
Is Callista okay? Like, what's going on? Like,
yo, get off my plane has a very different meaning for him nowadays.
Uh-oh. Yeah.
It's, I've already crashed it into a mountain.
It's too late. Intensify forward firepower.
I thought it was great. I'm going like 7.5 on the actual movie. I disagree with you, Lee. I think I would stop and watch for sure.
It's fine.
Yeah. Seth, your thing was great. I think all of Lee's accolades, and also you put it together in, I think, 17 minutes. That's a yeah. weirdly detailed plot for that amount of time.
Once I get a nug, I actually can do stuff.
I know. But yeah, it's a peek inside your brain to see, once you figure the thing out, you're just like, here we go.
Yep.
Eight for you. I think. Aww, yeah. Sweet. Edged it out for sure. Yeah.
Sweet.
One thing I'll point out that I do like about the movie that I don't think I gave much credit to is the other producers that work under her throughout the movie, or like the show writers and like the directors, the crew and everything, uh-huh. are kind of like so many heavy hitter that guy comedic people, like Rizwan Manji, who was in Schitt's Creek, is one of them. Oh, Arden yeah. Mirren, who is in everything, yeah, is one best. Of them.
Mm-hmm. Even the security guard guy has like now been in a bunch of stuff, but probably back then was not in a bunch of stuff.
Oh yeah, shit. Yeah, I'm not gonna try to find.
Doesn't
him.
Matter.
But yeah, yeah. Yep. Like it's just there are a lot of really great like. Oh, I recognize them people in this movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I saw the cast.
And there's a lot of actual newscasters in it, too, who do cameos, like Chris Matthews and Morley Safer are both in it.
They have stock footage of Condoleezza Rice. That was weird. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, 50 Cent is in it, and you think he's going to be in it, like, more, and then he isn't.
Yeah, that was weird. Yeah. Weird. Anyway. Seth, great job. You nailed it.
Grazie.
Next week, Lee will be doing a movie called Night on Earth.
Night on Earth.
Yep.
A movie that I think I've heard of,
but based on
the things Seth and I know, I'm certain you've heard of it.
Yeah.
And interesting. And you will not be, well, you will be surprised once you hear the whole
shtick, whole deal, sure. But yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Should
be interesting.
Yep. So, yeah, that thing.
I hate to bring the mood down. Guys, I'm looking at my waveforms. I don't think I've been recording like the whole time.
That can't be true.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if you're serious or not.
Yeah. All right, you piece of shit. That's the end. That's it. Mm-mm.